It's time for building the game with Jason and Friends from Tabletop Game Design. The fun never ends. It's at the end of the episode. That's
when it technically ends.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, May 6th, and you're listening to episode 623. As always, I am your host, Jason, here today joined by longtime listener, longtime guest, Connor Wake. Hello, Connor.
Hello.
You know, I have you back.
Did start listening to the podcast ages ago.
Like, and you've
very,
been on
very long time ago.
A few times too. So
I think I just fell off back in the day.
Yeah.
And then I picked it up again.
That's
and
fair.
Then I was like, oh shit, this is the podcast I listened to 5 years ago. They're still going.
If I'm being honest, the podcast kind of fell off for a bit too. So you probably got out in the middle part where it was worth getting out. So it's fine. Yeah, I know. It's all good. Yeah. I don't know that we were really showing up for a bit, but we're back now and have been for several hundred episodes. So it's all good.
Yeah. It's kind of absurd that this is 23 episodes since the 600th one.
That is a lot of episodes. That is what always boggles my mind is when I start saying these numbers and I'm just like, how has it been so long since that, like, you know, big cornerstone episode that you're like, wow, this huge round number. And then, it was over half a year away. No, it's going on half a year away. So we're going to talk about math this episode. And I've just screwed up basic math. Is 23 plus 23 is, oh yeah, no, that is 56. That's just, no, that's 46. Oh my gosh. I'm so tired. I am so exhausted.
We'll get to the math thing.
Anyways, yeah, go with your gut on the math thing, because
spoilers.
Whew. Anyways, so yeah, no, it's but it is crazy how quickly we fly away from these episodes, and then I have to start thinking about the next 100, and then I start to plan for the next 100, and then I lose interest because I realize how far away it still is, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, it's 5 episodes away.
Yeah,
it's crazy how that happens.
Jeez.
Cool. So, yeah, what you been up to?
Actually a bunch of art stuff. I kind of got burnt out game designing because I've got a bunch of games that are ready to pitch and that's annoying to do. So that I was like, well, why don't I get back to practicing art and see if I can just illustrate all these games myself. I have now drawn 39 monsters for my Creature Clicks game. I broke my hand.
Wow.
I've learned
to take breaks
and to do stretches and all that sort of stuff. So.
That's great though, that you've been able to do that. It's always exciting. Like, I'm always excited for people who can do like some of the art stuff for things they're working on and things like that. I always think that's super cool.
Yeah. It's been fun. It also feels like I'm not like the best artist, but it feels more like the game matches my personality and the vibe I wanted in the first place.
That's good. Yeah.
It's like, it might not be the best and the flashiest, but like, it looks like what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
So, cause I've pitched this, Creature Clicks game about, actually pitched it on the podcast ages ago.
You did. You did.
About like monsters at a party and trying to form a creature click. And, a lot of people would want to retheme it to buildings in a city or cute woodland creatures, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I was like, I just want to do the weird monsters thing. Because I kind of want them to be awkward and strange. Because they're doing weird social stuff. Like, forming a clique to get points, and who's got the best friend group according to these ranking. Like, you know, it's all kind of nonsense. So I just wanted to stick with the, like, absurd, weird monster theme. But anyway, so that's been good. That's what I've missed.
Good for you doing it the way you want to do it. I think that's great.
Yeah, and then I'm going to join the ranks of all the other people on the podcast starting up the little self-publishing things. So.
Right. Well, hey, right now it feels like that is, it feels like that's a way to go because, the industry is, it's a special kind of something right now.
It's like, I'm just going to aim low and just do like 100 copies or whatever just to get it done. And then maybe it'll grow into something, but like, that's not the plan.
Right. And the good news is, I mean, if you get 100 copies out there and then somebody ends up, it's not going to stop a publisher from saying, I want this suddenly. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like if they saw it, they're not going to be like, "Ooh, you sold 100 copies. No, I don't think we can do it anymore."
Yeah.
Nope.
No, that doesn't
tap that market completely.
So yeah, so we'll see. I've now technically got my own publishing company, registered the business and all that sort of stuff.
That's awesome.
Set up a newsletter. Setting up a newsletter is awful. Mm-hmm. The number of things you need to just send emails so they don't go into spam is both good and also really annoying.
Well, you have to you have to avoid those predatory words like hello and home. And
oh,
here.
Not even that stuff. Yeah, just I haven't gotten to that. I haven't sent an email yet. I've just gotten to the point of like it not going into the spam filter because you don't have your own domain with your own email address on that domain.
Right.
And all
right.
of that stuff.
Well, once you get to that point, don't ever say hello because apparently that is a word that gets filtered sometimes.
Yep, I've heard.
So yeah, that is.
But yeah, that's for later, great. Connor, to deal with. So for now, I need to get people on the mailing list in the first place. I essentially got to playtest it the other day. I playtested Creature Clicks. And then people were like, can we hear about this? Where can we hear more about this? I was like, I finally actually got that. Here, try and go to this website. And I found out one, the button to sign up for it was below the page, the bottom of the page on a mobile phone. So no one saw it. And then when they scrolled down to it, so, you know, it's all that sort of stuff. I was like, okay, button needs to be bigger, need to have less text above it, all that sort of stuff. And then I found out the confirmation email had the same problem where the button was below the email page. So no one clicked on it. And I was like, why is it confirming? 0%? It's like, wow, the little things like that really, really do it. So yeah,
they do.
Newsletter signups. I've got practice. But yeah. So that's me. That's been me.
Well, let's, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I've also been playing the Dominion app. That's kind of sucked up all my time.
Oh, I didn't know there was a Dominion app. All right.
Yeah. I just came
I've been waiting for that, whatever it's called. Balatro. Balatro. I've only ever seen it in writing and I don't remember. I was like, what is that?
It might be pronounced differently.
It's Balatro. Sure. I'll go with that. Sure. Yeah. Balatro. Yeah. Whatever. It doesn't matter to me. They're supposed to come out like on iOS and Android and I would like that to happen so I can try it. So, I mean, I could download it on my Switch, but I'm much more likely to play it if it's on my phone because it's right there. It's just easy.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good.
Well, anyway. You brought an interesting topic tonight that we're going to talk about. And that topic is basically, you're just going to teach us math.
No.
It's not. It's a joke. It's not. So,
yeah. Topic's kind of vague, but basically, every now and again, I see people posting about, like, what math should I learn to do game design? What's the most helpful thing? And then people saying math is really helpful, or if you're a mathematician or a software engineer, you're going to be good at game design. And then they never give like really good reasons. I think there's just this like math equals games. So they're good.
Like math games. So the two things I can think of to say for that are Reiner Knizia, right? He's like a mathematician, right?
Yeah. He's a mathematician. I don't think that's, but and my take is I don't think that's why he's a good game designer.
Right, right.
And I think honestly, there's other stuff. It's like a correlation, not a causation thing.
Yes, yes. Well, and some of his games are just, like some of his games that I don't care for are just like, it's like, hey, play this game and then do math. Like that really is what it feels like. It's like, do math. This game is, because some of his games literally feel like math with a theme laid on top of it.
You mean arithmetic with a theme laid on top?
What?
Okay, so maybe that's the thing. So math, when people say math, what is math to you when you say math?
When I say math, I mean, I really want to say, Connor, I mean math, like, duh. But no, I'm like,
you mean it?
I mean adding, subtracting, multiplication. Math to me is a blanket term. It's like, does that make sense? Like when I say math, it's like when I say science. I understand that there are different branches of math.
Yeah. But
When I say math, I mean the royal math. It's like the royal
You mean a subset of math.
That's not what I mean. I mean all of math. But I'm guessing that math is a subset of something else.
Well, I guess it's wrong. When most people say math, they just mean arithmetic, like adding, subtracting, multiplying.
Right.
Just like,
no, I say math for math. Like, I just say math. I'm lazy like that.
Yeah, and like so that's the first thing. Whenever people say like, oh, math is helpful for game design, but like I'm pretty sure imaginary numbers are not going to help you, and like doing differential equations is also not going to help you. It's like,
so whenever people say game design, yeah.
They're never clear about what they actually mean. So I feel like it's never helpful. So that's one thing I wanted to kind of get to is like, okay, what is actually helpful math, maybe?
Mm-hmm,
and also, like, what is not helpful math? Like, what are the rabbit holes that people want to send you down that is just pointless? Because I think there are some interesting things, and then there's some interesting things that are just useless. And this is all coming from, I went to college and got my computer science and math degree. And then I got a job as a software engineer, and I have never really used anything from those classes. So, I learned more in my first few months in my job than I did. I mean, I learned a ton in college. I just didn't learn anything necessarily
so
applicable.
To get that job, did you need a degree in computer science?
This is where me being jaded about the software industry started. I got that job because the hiring manager gave me a dynamic programming problem to solve, which is one of the most... It's a very difficult type of problem that I have never seen since. No one does it. Like, it's a way to solve problems. If you need to do it, you are on the cutting edge of stuff, doing some weird, very specific problems. You're not doing day-to-day things.
Right.
Anyway, I got it because I figured that one out, because I was just straight out of college.
So you're like, I still know how to do this.
Yeah, and then proceeded to never use any of it. I also got in because he forgot to ask me the interview questions that were actually relevant. He was busy at the time. And then also apparently no one on the team wanted to hire me because I was new out of college, and he pushed me through. Turns out that was maybe a valid reason, because everyone quit after I joined. And having a new
Are you still that company, or are you at a different company?
Oh gosh, no, I'm gone. I was there longer than I should have been, but like also getting a job is stressful, so I just hung on to it. But like, yeah, anyway, so bit
this is
about all that sort of stuff.
That though is like, I, you know, when I, cause I ran a team of programmers and developers, and, and I didn't know a lot about it myself, but I ran this team of these people. Cause I was just good at, you know, the managing of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were, my best programmer was this like scrappy person who never went to school for any of it. Mm-hmm. I taught her a little bit from what I knew, and she just was like, okay. And then just kept learning more and more and more. Yeah. And then I look at several people that we got who were just out of college, and none of them could do anything compared to her. Yeah. And she was really nervous because she was like, oh my gosh, these people are going to be so much better at this to me. And I was like,
they can do dynamic programming.
Like, right.
Which is useless. I mean,
they couldn't do what we needed, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that was a big old problem.
Yeah. So maybe from there we can jump into the first thing that I wanted to talk about, which was the other thing that I hear a lot is, and it's kind of true, I think, is a lot of game designers are also software engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Or like there's a decent overlap there at least, and it's like, why is that? And we did talk about this briefly before, but like, why do you think being a software engineer is helpful, or for being a game designer, or why are there so many software engineers who are game designers?
Yeah, so I, you know, the ways that I've seen it be helpful, right, like in my personal like anecdotal experience, right, like I've seen when I was designing stuff with Neil that he could quick whip up a program that would do some things for us that saved us time and did math for us and stuff. It may have just been arithmetic. There probably were not imaginary numbers, but it did, you know, it solved some problems for us very quickly. And that was always like, wow, you know, where he could be like, let me see what happens if I just run this and look at all the different ways this could, you know, come out, like, and just run it and then say, okay, this is, these are all of the possible things we're looking at here. And we could have done it by hand, but it would have taken longer. Right.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think my honest answer is to why are so many software engineers, game designers and game players is nerds. No, no, it's because, I'm joking. I actually did not say that when we talked earlier, but I was saving that one for the podcast live. No, I think that to me, there's when you are a software designer, right? Like you are creating, from my knowledge, right? You're creating systems. You are, I thought, doing some math, currently not. But you're doing things that you would do in a game, right? Like, so I think that, you know, and chances are, if you're into computer science-y stuff and software development, there's a stronger chance that you enjoy video games or do something with that, right? So I just think there's this big correlation between what people are into, right, and what they're drawn to and how those things overlap. I don't, off the top of my head, know what skills being a software designer gives you for that, other than being able to like automate some things that I've seen. And I think your brain maybe works in a way where that's helpful, but I don't know that I can quantify exactly what that is. Especially because you've been very down on math ever since we started.
A lot of people think software engineering is helpful because like we're really good at logic and figuring out algorithms and things like
right.
And game design is kind
of I've heard that before.
And it's like, it's sort of, I don't know. That part I don't believe personally, because yes, algorithms are involved in software engineering, but it's like rarely, you will rarely code up a novel algorithm ever.
Like, right.
You're kind of just implementing pieces and putting pieces of a puzzle together. More what you're doing is, and this is why I think it's helpful, is you will be given a problem statement of, we need to display all of a, I work for a health tech company, so display all of a patient's most recent like vaccinations or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll need to figure out where to get those from, where to store them, how to send them to them in what format, and then coordinate with all of the other teams involved to make sure that they have all of the necessary pieces of data so that like when the vaccine shows up, we can put the like display name instead of the like code in the back end for it, right?
Right.
So like
right,
that's right. Mostly what being a software engineer right. is.
Database
like
taking management.
That, yeah, it's like taking that problem statement and breaking right. it down into what do I need to right. make this work.
Mm-hmm.
That part's the game design part, right? Taking
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And breaking it down into, well, I guess if I want players to be having a tricky time, I'm gonna need to make a problem that is not easy to solve for them. Right. And how do I do that? And then testing it over and iterating, right? Software engineers also do a lot of iteration. You run a thing, it breaks, and then you fix it. I think it's that sort game, of stuff. I mean,
board game design oriented, yeah. Yes, for sure. Also video game, but yeah.
Yeah. It's not really the algorithm stuff or the logic stuff or any of that stuff I think that's helpful. It's all that stuff, which you mentioned, you've done that too. You're not a software engineer.
Yeah, so I worked with a team of software engineers, you know, and one of the big things that I was good at, because like you said, we did chat about this a little bit ahead of time, you know, I was really good at taking a problem. You know, we were at a company where we were not a software company, but we had a team that could develop software to do people's jobs for them, essentially, right? Which when you're coming from an industry like I was in, which was an old industry, the mortgage industry, like people are very afraid, right? And they would say things like, you can't make a computer make the decisions I have to make. And I was like, hold my beer. Let me show you how to do that. Cause I drank a lot at work. I wanted to, cause it was awful, but no. So it would be like, okay, well tell me, you know, cause you'd say, can you, is there a logical decision for all of this? Oh, no, you have to really think about it. Okay, well, tell me step one. Okay, it's this. Well, how do you decide this? Well, if this is that, then this. Okay, well, that's logic right there, right?
Yeah.
And you literally go through all the things, and it might be the last decision point is, now I have to look at all these different factors and make a decision. And sometimes you could say, okay, well, tell me the factors. And then they would say, well, that's where it's different every time. Awesome. So what I've done is, you've now clicked a button, and it's presented, like you were saying, you with the information you need, and you make the decision. And it's like that, instead of go through and gather all of this information in these different ways. And so I have loved breaking down problems like that into smaller bits, into, like, you know, little mini systems to make them work. And that really, you're absolutely right. Like, that is what draws me to game design, is how do I solve these little problems? Except for the difference with this is, it's in a fun way. How do I do it in a way that will be, you know, for it was like, how do I do it in a way that the person will use it, right? But I think something that, like, and I don't want to get too far here away from what we're talking about, but, like, I think that one of the big things that we focused on, because there was so much resistance to the technology, right, was every time one of my team members, like, would bring me a thing that they wanted to do, like, the rule was, you have to tell me first what's in it for the employee, right? And it can't be, it's just going to save them time, right? Because, like, that isn't, they didn't necessarily want that, right? So with that being the case, you know, I think that I think that that's a lot of game design is that question, right? It's kind of like, where's the fun? But I mean, it's what's in it for them. What is in it for the player to play in this system, right?
How do I motivate people to do something?
Right. You know, rather than just saying, if at the end of the game you haven't done this, minus 10 points, right?
Because if all, like, you were good at was, like, logic and algorithms, that is useless for getting someone to enjoy something.
No, you'd make a real boring game and it'd be awful. And that's the thing.
Math is full of problems that are difficult to solve and have all these cool, interesting properties about them. They'd make terrible games. But anyway, so it's like, I feel like when I feel like people see a lot of software engineers in game design and then go, oh, there must be something special about them that makes them want to do this. I think part of it is being nerds. Being a software engineer puts you in this, like, nerdy group of people. Except I don't think that's pretty true anymore. Like, I know two people at my company that, like, are into board games. We can't get a board game group together. Most people want to go hiking. So, you know, I don't
think that it's a product of where you live as well, right? But
oh, no, these are all, I'm at a company that, like, all
All around. Well, fair enough then,
No, so I don't think it's so true anymore that, like, all software engineers are nerds. But anyway, so I think people over-index on that. Well, it must be because they're smart and good at logic. And I think it's just, no, I think software engineers have a decent chunk of money and time. So
they just disposable income.
Yeah, so, like, it's much easier for them to just go work on board games because, and they do spend their day making stuff. So they usually are more inclined to, like, making things. And I think that's definitely part of it. But, like, so many other jobs are the same sort of thing. If you spend your day working on a project, making things. I think teachers are end up being good game designers because they actually have to come up with curriculums for students to motivate them to do a thing in a fun way.
And and what's the first, like, question they're asking every time is, how do I make these kids want to do this thing, right? Like, so, that's the thing.
Yeah. So that was the part of what I wanted to get on this to talk about was, like, please don't put software engineers up on a pedestal because they're, like, good at algorithms and logic. I think that's the wrong thing. I think that's not good about what's helpful. Being a software engineer, I don't think that's what it brings to the table. It can be helpful for other things, but I don't think that's the main thing. So anyway, that's that. Because, I've learned so much more about game design from the product people at my company. Like, what you do, you know, of going to all the users and finding out what they need and breaking that down into problem statements so the user testing and all that stuff. That's game design. That's what I learned. So maybe that's the other thing about being a software engineer that's helpful. I'm around those people. So I can, like, learn how they do it.
Right. And I think there is, I mean, there's, as a software engineer, depending on all of the people that you interface with at your company, depending on what level you are and how that works, like, you're exposed to so many different you know, inputs, right, and requirements and things that I think that probably helps. You know what I mean? Yeah, that for sure is.
We're just building things professionally.
Right.
So we just run into all of those things. Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. But I do think what you said earlier about the little making an algorithm to procedurally generate a bunch of stuff, that's pretty useful. I've done that a few times. And so that's so, if there is one thing, if you're like, oh, I want to know what the computer scientists know. Mm-hmm. Maybe learn Python if you're interested. That's going to be your basic best bet to like get some code running to like run a bunch of simulations. But honestly think it would be quicker to just find a person you know who can code and ask them. Don't learn it yourself.
Right, right.
You're probably going to only run it once, and then it was not worth the weeks spent learning how to code to then run your algorithm once and then change the whole game because it didn't work.
Right. I will say that I've seen people, several people I know, who are good at using things like Component Studio because they, like, you know, have you know, either done database management or software engineering to where they are to where, you know, they are just constantly just faced with things. Really crappy interfaces and like Component Studio.
Yeah.
I use Component Studio, but it is like the worst learning curve.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it was clearly designed by someone who knows how to design these things, but not who's ever done any UI.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion, if that person is listening to this, I'm sorry, but that's what a user feels like. And I'm not the only user that feels that way. And yet I still pay the monthly fee and use the program because the program is powerful and does what I need it to do. It's just way more complex and nothing really flows. It feels like to me, I'm sure to the end database engineer, like this makes total sense, but
no, half the time I look at these programs
on a pedestal.
Yeah, well, no, half the time I look at these programs and it's been built by a database engineer and it hasn't been designed by a UX designer. So the interface is terrible. But anyway, that does lead to the thing I was going to say. Instead of learning Python, because you can get all of this, like a lot of the similar automation stuff by just learning how to actually use spreadsheets. That's what I use all the time. I don't code stuff.
When I was originally working in all of these different automation things, we were just using Excel for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Doing macros and stuff like that. Then we switched to doing databases. Then we switched to doing, you know, front end like development stuff with like actual software, like, you know, actually writing code and programming.
Yeah.
But like a lot of that was just, I mean, now Google Sheets is the main thing that I design it.
Yeah.
I have so like, I use Google Sheets to do the things I need to do.
Mm-hmm. So I think the best thing you can learn with Google Sheets is just learn how to use functions and then learn how to set variable. I don't know. I don't even know what it's called. But basically, you'll say, I want to add these two things together. And you'll do equal sum in the box, right? And then it'll let you, instead of
regular formulas.
Just super regular formulas, right? And it lets you click a box. And then what you can do is you can drag that box and copy it all the way down.
Yep.
And it will generally automatically move the rows down that it's copying, right? And then that's basically done what a Python for loop would do. It's just loop through all the data, apply the same thing to all of it. Ta-da, you've automated it. You didn't need to learn how to code or even run Python scripts because that's a nightmare in itself.
Most spreadsheets I have, like if I just am like looking at a game design spreadsheet here, it's mostly just like I do percentages so that I can have a quick calculation of, if it's a card game, I always want to know what percentage of each card is in the deck, right? Like how did I, just because that is useful information to have.
Yeah.
You know, like of each card, what percentage of it is there?
Or like just totals, like how many of this trait do I have in the game? Are they all equal?
Yep.
That way you can just manually change stuff until the numbers line up.
I use averages a lot to figure out what the average is. But because, again, that's something you can completely do manually if you need to.
Yeah.
but it's real nice when you just have it like ready to go, you know?
Yeah.
Like you just, you're like, hey, here this is.
That's what I did for a game recently. I have all of these goals and I needed to figure out scores, point values for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have written an algorithm that would figure out all of the optimal stuff, but mm-hmm. it's so much quicker. Okay. Only do an algorithm if you're going to be running it multiple times.
Right,
or it's something right. really complicated that you can't wrap your head around and it would take forever to do. That's the only times you need right. an algorithm. If right. you've got 20 cards, you don't need an algorithm.
Right.
So what you do is you go, oh, well, here's some properties about these goals. It takes this many steps on average, if I just manually figure it out, mm-hmm. to get to that goal. It needs this many types of resources. It needs, you can only do it on round 3. Cool. I'm going to multiply each of those numbers by a different amount, and then I'm going to add them together, and then I'm going to round it, and that's going to be my score, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just keep changing the multiplication factors until it looks like what you want, right? And that's it. That's like, I think, all the programming, quote unquote, that you need to know.
Right.
I think that's super useful. I don't think learning Python is going to help much. If you want to learn Python, do it. But that's Google Sheets is going to get you so far.
Well, I just think that like people have to really consider like your time and like mm-hmm. what is worth learning. And what isn't, you know, because as game designers, most of us are doing this as a secondary thing, right? Like we've got, you know, whatever it is, right? Whether it's a day job or, you know, you're in school or, you know, you have a family, whatever you're doing, you've got a lot of time you're dedicating to that, those other things. And then suddenly now, you know, you've got to decide what do you have for game design and what does that look like? And I mean, that I think is the most common conversation we have in our Tuesday night meetups, right?
Yeah.
Like every time somebody's like, oh, I'm, you know, I don't have time for this, or I'm approaching this the wrong way, blah, blah, blah. And like, thinking I'm just going to learn a whole software language thing to do this. Right. Like is that actually going to save you time in the long run?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. If you're interested in it, go for it. But like, I just see a bunch of now and again, people recommend that you go learn Python, or it'd be really good to learn this machine learning thing, and you can get 90% of the way there without that. So that's the big thing I wanted to
mention. Just, and
that's good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Because you're not everyone is giving the advice you are giving, right? Some people are like, oh yeah, no, it was really helpful. It's like, you know,
yeah. And there's nothing special that us software engineers are, we're not getting a huge boost out of it. We're maybe getting this like 10% boost in this random weird niche section of board game design.
Right.
We're not getting a general boost from it. Like, so yeah. Which now maybe we can go into the math section. Because that's the other thing people are like. They're like, you should learn math. which, and then people start spouting out things like learn game theory, or learn graph theory, or learn probability and statistics. And again, they never elaborate past that. Because I can tell you, don't go learn statistics. You really don't need to know how to do a least squares regression on your game. Right. Like, and that's what you're going to be learning in statistics. You're going to be learning all sorts of interesting things, admittedly, but useless stuff. It's going to be stuff that's like super helpful if you are going to be doing big statistical analysis across lots and lots of different games or whatever. It's not going to be helpful in the making the game part. It's going to be helpful in the analyzing the games after they've been built part.
Right. And that's what playtesters are for. So yeah.
but don't go learn statistics. That's whatever.
Well,
but,
go ahead.
I was gonna say there's a couple things that I just want to put off the bat. Like, don't go learn this unless you're interested. But I do have some things that I think you should go have a look at if you are interested, because I think
mm-hmm.
are kind of helpful. So statistics, it's whatever. What you should learn instead, if you do care about it, is basic probability stuff. And really mm-hmm. all you need to know is permutations and combinations. That's
right.
kind of it.
Right.
I won't teach you what those are, because that's a whole thing. But like, if you're interested, and here's maybe why you would want to learn this. And I think the fun one is the birthday paradox, which, do you know about the birthday paradox?
You know, you mentioned it to me earlier, and I said no, but now I'm gonna say what I think it is.
Okay.
I don't know the specific numbers, but it's something about number of people in a room and the probability that two people have the same birthday. But I don't remember anything other than that. I don't remember what the number is. I know that the number is surprisingly small.
Yes. What do you think it is? Knowing that it's surprisingly small. Well, yeah. Okay. So the thing is, if you've got how many people in a room do you need until the probability that two people have the same birthday is greater than 50%? That's the how it's stated.
I'm going to guess super low and stupid and say 9.
Okay. That's not quite.
It's probably like, 17?
23.
23. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, but most people think it's higher, much higher.
Well, because people say 365 days a year, so half that, right? That's about how many people you need, right? Like that's...
Yeah, exactly. They're like, so, and I think all that comes from the birthday paradox is people are really, really bad at probabilities and figuring out probabilities, which is actually really helpful for game design because you can rely on that fact. So that's lesson one to take from probability.
Right.
But lesson two, if you just look up how the birthday problem is like solved, it kind of covers most of the stuff you would need to learn. Yeah. But most probability is just the number of ways a thing can happen over all of the possibilities. And you just divide and get your probability, right?
It just feels like it would be cool to see that written out because it feels wrong, right?
It does feel
wrong. The number doesn't sound right.
Nah, but I think if you go learn how the birthday problem is solved and you do a bit of basic looking into permutations and combinations, and you just kind of understand how that works, that kind of is the basis you need to solve most probability problems in game design. Because also you don't need to solve most probability problems in game design perfectly. You just need a rough idea
of how
unlikely things are or how likely things are. Really, that's usually what you need. It's just, is this super, super likely? Is this a 50% thing or a 10% thing? And so that's what I would look into.
Now can you explain to me the three doors thing?
Oh, God.
The game show paradox, three doors. Basically, somebody says there's three doors, pick one, it's got a car, and you pick one, and then they show you one, but they know they're going to show you one without the car. And then they say, now... do you want to change to the other one that's left? And I think you're supposed to change.
You always change.
So here's what I don't understand about that, Connor. Let me just, we don't have to solve it.
You sure, no, that's good. Because this is another example of people are bad at probability and it doesn't make sense.
So this is how I heard it explained on a clip on Facebook from a movie about playing blackjack. This is basically what the guy said. When you first picked, you had a 1 in 3 chance of getting it, 33%, right? But now I've revealed one, and now, you have a 1 in 2 chance, a 50% chance of picking it right. So you should switch because now you've got a 50% chance of it being correct, or 66% maybe. Is it six? Either way, it does not make any sense to me. There are two doors.
The short answer is as soon as you introduce new knowledge, new information to the problem, it just all changes drastically. Basically, this is one of those cases where if you just, there's no fancy trick to it, really. It really is just count up the number of ways that could happen, right? You literally just list out all of the ways it could happen at the top. All of the total possibilities at the bottom, and you just kind of go through every scenario. And if you go through every scenario, you have to think through the process of, well, they didn't open my door. Like, you go through like, well, they had to open that door, which, okay, what happens if my door is the bad one? What does that mean, right? You just go through all of those situations, and if you just count them all up, basically, you get, oh, I should change.
Right.
And it's only a statistical thing is the other thing.
I think that's where I get stuck.
You're only playing the game once.
Right. Is that statistically you should switch, but if you switch and it's not there, it doesn't matter. Because you either 100% won or you 0% won.
And that's the other thing. And that doesn't feel good,
right? Yeah.
That's the other thing you need to learn about probabilities.
Right. Is it doesn't.
You're only doing it once.
Yeah.
If you're doing it 1,000 times, okay, totally. Switch every single time.
It's when somebody says.
It really doesn't matter.
Like, all I have to do on this D&D roll is not roll a one. So I'm not going to roll a one because, but you're going to, first of all, because that's just how that works. But. Like, it's, yeah, there's that, it's different, right? I mean, like, it's, yeah, you don't.
So that's why you shouldn't learn statistics, because statistics is about looking at large amounts of stuff, because none of it really works when you've got, like, an example. And most people play a game a few times. Most people do not play a game enough to hit statistical, likelihood, statistical significance for any of these things. It's the whole reason why it's, like, if something can happen, no matter how unlikely, it's going to happen as soon as 1,000 people play your game. So you should just deal with it. You don't need to know the probability. You don't need to know if it's 10% versus 20%. Who cares? It's going to happen. So deal with it. And that's why I don't think you need to learn it, because people are really bad at figuring out probabilities, and then they're really bad at applying probabilities to their very specific individual situation. So, yeah. But birthday paradox, it's good. I think it'll teach you most of what you need to know. Because it just teaches you some of the counterintuitive stuff. But yeah.
Right, which is a large portion of it.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I think that people always say is game theory. Oh, you should learn game theory.
Yeah, I was going to bring that one up, because I've heard that a lot too.
Yeah. Game theory starts with assuming that you have a rational actor. Are game players rational actors?
They are not.
Okay. So, game theory is it's interesting. It helps explain some things. But most of the time, it just ends up being like, well, this is what game theory would say would happen. And that never happens in real life, because people don't work like that. And that's kind of one of the interesting things about game theory. Go for it. Have a look it up. But, like, what you should learn game theory for is not to learn game theory, but game theory's come up with a bunch of fun games. Prisoner's Dilemma is a game theory thing.
Which is the single worst game ever created. Because that, right, the whole idea of Prisoner's Dilemma, for anyone that, I mean, everyone should know, right? But you basically have, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but this is my understanding of it. You're both, say, sitting at a computer console on opposite sides of a wall. We both have to hit a button. If we both hit, like...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the...
Well, it's Prisoner's Dilemma.
Prisoner's Dilemma is the original, right? Is the...
Yeah.
There's two people who have committed a crime. They've separated you, right? They've said, if you tell us what Connor did, Jason, then you go free. And they say, Connor, if you tell what Jason did, then you go free and he goes to jail. But if you both talk, then you both go to jail, because
for longer.
Yeah, for longer.
The important part.
Yes. Or if you just both do nothing, then you leave.
If you both do nothing, you go to a jail for a short amount of time.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Either way.
Game theory mathematicians basically spend all their time coming up with these, like, unsolvable things to find out, like, how they work. And how counterintuitive they are and all that sort of stuff. Or they break down problems into, like, similar sub-problems, right? They'll be like, oh, this game is just using Prisoner's Dilemma. I can convert this game into the Prisoner's Dilemma. And they basically can map everything down so that they can figure out, like, properties of games that just apply to everything. That's what a lot of math is like, find out one thing and then be like, oh, if I convert this into the same thing, I know the same stuff about it. Cool. But all you need to do is just go look up a bunch of game theory games and see what sounds interesting, and just maybe put them in your game. You don't need to learn game theory.
There was a game that I played that had Prisoner's Dilemma, just like straight up Prisoner's Dilemma in it. And I hated it, because I hate Prisoner's Dilemma, because
that's fair.
It's just not fun. Like, it's not.
Not designed to be fun.
Right. So don't put it in a game. Like,
it is designed to be is, like, not quite solvable, right? It's designed to be awkward, which is a good property in some games.
It is, like, but it just feels, I guess it just feels overdone, maybe.
Oh, like, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's other ones to look at. I would just go, like, if you want to learn game theory, just go through the Wikipedia articles for a bunch of, like, game theory games and see what sounds fun. Don't learn game theory. Like, people have already done the work. There's nothing you're going to do that's going to prove anything new. We actually do game theory all the time when you, like, when you think about, like, all the steps that a player would do in a game, in one of your games that you're designing, and you kind of map out all the steps and see, like, what should they pick, that's game theory. You're just doing it in, like, maybe less of a rigorous way, and you're not trying to write a paper about it.
Right.
But you're pretty much already doing enough of the game theory stuff, so you don't need to go learn game theory.
Just give me the trolley problem, because that's solvable, and we're fine. Trolley problem is 100% solvable. If anyone tells you it's not, they're wrong. So...
Are you talking about that you flip the switch before?
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's going to hit 5 people. You flip the switch, it hits 1. You flip the switch. Do you want to know why? Glad you asked. I'd love to tell you. For one, 5 people are going to die or 1 person is going to die. But Jason, if you do nothing, then you're not involved. That's not true, because you have to think about the families of the 5 people who are going to, like, yell at you and probably sue you, because this is America. That's how it works. You have 5 families suing you now. If you flip the switch... only 1 person dies, 5 people live, and then you have 1 family likely suing you, and the other families, and you know what? The whole, like, internet machine and news media, they're going to have your back. So you just probably pull the switch. If you're ever in that position and I pull the switch on you, I'm very sorry. I didn't want to do it, but that was how I solved it. So, yeah.
So,
the thing is, there's no good answer. That's the whole point. Good answer, right?
They're all thought experiments. So, like,
right.
Come up with your own thought experiment, or just steal an interesting one for yourself.
Right.
And that's going to be my common theme with all this math stuff, is someone smarter than you has already figured it out.
Right.
Learn from them. Don't learn from scratch. You are going to be 100 years behind.
Right.
Because here's what I found out that really jaded me about math, or disillusioned me. So I took a differential equations class, which I don't really need to go into what those are, but they're complicated problems. You do all this calculus stuff to solve them and figure out what x equals, but in, like, a very complicated way. And then you get to the section in the book where they're like, oh, so what do we use this for? How do we apply this? You just spent, like, 6 months or whatever learning how to solve these differential equations by hand, right? And they're like, there's actually only, like, 3 applications of them. We've already figured them out. Don't worry. We plugged them into a computer already. They got them. You're never going to solve these by hand. Actually, most of them aren't solvable by hand. A bunch of mathematicians 100 years ago actually figured that out. They proved that they can't all be solved. I don't know if that's specifically it, but, like, that ends up usually happening. What did they do instead? A bunch of computer scientists or other mathematicians got together and came up with a way to approximate it. And they just use an algorithm to approximate it. No one actually solves them by hand.
And the answer was 42.
Yeah. And so you just get to it and you're like, oh, so this differential equation thing I'm learning about it's 200 years too late. It's not relevant.
Right.
No one does it. It's just I'm learning it so I can get the general concept. But did I really need to, like...
Mm-hmm.
Lose all this sleep over passing all of these differential equations exams? No.
No, you did
never
not.
Never using them. And so that's what's going to happen if you look into most of this math stuff. You're going to be so far behind. So learn only the practical things that people actually use. Don't just learn graph theory or whatever. Same thing with graph theory. Graph theory is another one I keep seeing people talk about. And there are some interesting problems with problems in graph theory that can be used in games. Sagrada kind of uses it, actually. It's the map coloring problem. It's basically something like, how many colors do you need to be able to perfectly color all the sections in a map such that no two sections have the same color in them?
Right.
Sagrada uses that, but it doesn't, like... No one had to learn the math behind
it. They just laid tiles just out until it worked. And then
They just looked it up and, like, that's interesting. So what if I use that problem? Because now I know it's tricky. I know it's a tricky problem. Mathematicians have proved that it's kind of tricky. Perfect for a game then, right? Because now you know that humans aren't going to just be able to follow a very basic thing they can figure out on the spot. and just do it, and it's boring, right?
Right.
Math has a lot of problems like that in it that mathematicians have proved are tricky, essentially.
Right.
That's oversimplifying it. But what you can look up is a set of problems called NP complete problems or NP hard problems.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry too much about it. Funnily enough, they actually proved that King Domino is NP hard. And all it basically means is it's pretty easy to check that the answer to said problem is correct. That's pretty easy. You can have a look at your King Domino board and be like, cool, I did it. I scored a bunch of points. But figuring out how to solve it is really tricky in comparison.
Right.
And that's kind of a good property for like a puzzle. It's specifically like a puzzly game to have, right? There is no simple solution to how to do the thing, but you can kind of check afterwards that you did it. Sudoku is another one of those, right? Really easy to check that you've done a Sudoku correctly, right? Really, really difficult to solve the Sudoku. So if you look up NP hard or NP complete problems, you'll basically get a list of interesting little problems that are tricky and you can kind of apply them. Polyominoes are one of those, right? How do you tile a board with polyominoes? That's one of them. How do you Carcassonne's tiling system, where it's like edge matching, how do edges match together and all that sort of stuff? And how do you do that like properly and nicely and all that? That's another one of those. So you don't need to know what NP complete means. It's kind of involved. But if you want a list of interesting math problems that someone else has already figured out are tricky, it's in there. Another one, the traveling salesman problem. Do you know that one?
Oh, that one I do not know.
Yeah, so it's literally what it says, actually. You got a bunch
I had
of
a feeling.
Yeah. You have a bunch of locations on a map. What is the most efficient way for a traveling salesman to visit all of the locations? Like, how do you do it all in, like, the shortest routes?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of easy to check, but it is not easy to figure out what the efficient route is. Computers can do it, but they sort of essentially just brute force it or have to come up with a bunch of heuristics.
Oh, yeah, they just... Yeah.
So, like... Yeah. That's an oversimplification, but basically, and the traveling salesman problem shows up in all sorts of pickup and deliver games, right? And it's an interesting little problem because there isn't an obvious answer to it, right? Us humans, if a computer can't do it quickly, we're not going to do it quickly.
Right.
So then you get all sorts of like interesting, like quote unquote, unsolvable for a human in a reasonable amount of time problems. So have a look at those because I think they're fun. And then you want to, and don't worry about like how to solve a game. Like, for example, if you look up the game of Nim, have you heard of that one?
That sounds familiar. I think might be thinking of the Rats of Nim. Is that a book?
Don't know.
Secret of Nim?
Oh, yeah, that's one. I think it's called Nim. God.
There's a book called The Rats of Nim. It's a trilogy. I bet the Secret of Nim is in
game of Nim. The game of Nim is a math game, basically. Two players take turns removing sticks from like different piles, and whoever takes the last one loses. Oh, you've probably played it with the chocolate bar game. You know where you take like an entire row or column, set of rows or columns from a chocolate bar, and whoever takes the last corner piece from the chocolate bar loses. Do you know that one? Oh, okay.
No.
Oh, so other people might have heard of it.
I just ate the chocolate.
It's solved. It's solved. There's a way for like the second or first player to always win, and it doesn't really matter. The proof for it is tricky. You don't really need to know any of that stuff to use it in the game. I can kind of guarantee if you put like a bunch of, if your game is and relatively complicated, it's probably not going to be solvable. So you just don't need to worry about learning game theory to figure out if it's solvable. Your players will figure it out for you. Because
that makes sense.
It's usually very simple games that are solvable. Something that can be boiled down to some very basic math that is solvable, right? And as soon as you start throwing in lots of different like routes that a person can take in a game, it just becomes it's too difficult. And if it's and you're not going to prove it's solvable or not, it took a research paper and a team of people to prove that King Domino was NP hard. You're not going to do it yourself. So don't worry about it, is the thing. But look at the problems, because I think they're fun and they're a good bunch of things to pull from for your game. That's kind of... Is that what I had with this stuff? Yep, that's pretty much it. Don't learn math. just look up stuff and you'll be good.
This is my kind of advice, helpful. Man. Don't do the work. It reminds me of something
Do other work. Do the relevant work. Like, here's the thing. Game design is... Oh, what is it? No. Math is just really theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
Engineering uses math, and it's very... There's very specific pieces of math you use for it, and it's very applicable in the real world. Mm-hmm. But where am I going with this? Oh, yeah. Game design is more like engineering than it is like math. Right.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Math is kind of in the background because math is used to describe everything, because that's just what mathematicians spend their time doing, is figuring out how to describe everything.
Well, they have to justify their existence. So.
Hey, they figured out how to use imaginary numbers to do electrical engineering, so like they get it sometimes.
Yeah, it's fair.
It's absurd. Yeah.
Some of the things they've calculated are impressive, no doubt.
But yeah. Don't worry about it. Mathematicians and software engineers, they don't really have any bigger advantage over game design than any other field, really. Everyone brings mm-hmm. their own unique take to the table. Software engineers are just overrepresented because I think we have more time and money.
Nerds.
And we're nerds.
No, I think
but also most of them aren't even nerds anymore. So
no, it's fair. You know, I was this is something I've tried to explain to my dad and other people before too. Like, actually a better example is when I was working with those new software programmers, and they were like, I'm not sure, I can't find the answer to this. And I was like, just Google it. Like, Google is the best programming language ever. You just type something in Google and it'll tell you how to solve it. This is my belief. We'll call it Slingerland's rule. If you have a problem and you don't understand how to do something, someone on the internet smarter than you figured out how to do it and then told someone else who had the same problem that you had how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like, it's so true. If it is like an equation or anything that like you have to figure out how to do and it's been solved, somebody has put it out there. And that reminds me of I've seen multiple people post this, and I don't know what the original was, but that the person said, I would post software questions or developer questions, programming, whatever, and nobody would answer me. So instead I created a second account, and then I would post the question, and then I would immediately log into the second account and answer the question incorrectly. And within minutes, people had butted in to correct my incorrect answer and tell the original guy the right answer, because they didn't want to help. They wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. And I said guy on purpose because it was probably dudes. It was probably dudes. So that's a thing. But no, I mean, I think that says a lot about that. But yeah, I'm totally on board with, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, right? I mean, because some of these wheels are complex and imaginary and, you know, don't exist. And like, why spend the time trying to figure that out? So anyway. Well, hey, you should, this was a fun combo. For what I understood of it, made a lot of sense. So, which I understood more than I expected to, which I appreciate. But you were going to tell us about a game. So tell us about a game.
Oh boy. Yeah. Shifting gears.
So this game is a prisoner's dilemma game.
No. Yeah, like most games are based on social interactions anyway, and those aren't mathematically modelable. Okay, so game I've been working on recently. It's inspired by Wilmot's Warehouse, which is a video game. Have you played that one?
Oh yeah, because you recommended it. And
Have I told you about this already?
I don't know if you've pitched this on the show or not. If you haven't, it was a long time ago. But you said you were working on a game. I know that you've been working for a long time. But Wilmot's Warehouse, super fun. I did the thing that I think a lot of people do, where you get to the point where it's just so overwhelming that you're like, well, I'm not going to play this anymore. Like, this is
the problem.
Satan's Warehouse now.
I wanted to solve.
Awesome. I look forward to you solving this problem.
So I wanted to kind of, I liked the core of Wilmot's Warehouse, the here's a weird shape, sort it, put it somewhere, because you're going to need to get it eventually. there's no rules. The game doesn't impose any rules on you of like, oh, you need to figure out the correct match. Nah, you make your own match. Did you do a good match? Perfect. It'll help you find it quicker. But it won't tell you that you were wrong or right. That's not the heuristic. So I liked that core concept. But kind of as you said, there's a point where you're just like, oh wow, I'm just kind of managing a warehouse now. This is a bit tiring. And some people are really into that. But I was like, okay, maybe can we make this a bit more, lean a bit more into the like, the humans are good at making associations with things, and can we lean into that? Mm-hmm. And also do it as like a group, right? Because I wanted to make it a co-op game. And so I wanted to make the board game version of it. Turns out they might be doing that anyway. There might be a board. I swear, when I started this, there was not. And then someone pointed it out or Google and was like, hey, look, they're doing this. And I was like, oh, God.
So I kind of quit. The single most cursed person when it comes to like in the Discord, the number of times you've had your heart broken because someone already designed a game you designed, was currently designing a game you designed, stole your game, or numerous other things. Like, I've never seen that happen to someone as much as you.
Gets me good at just cycling through ideas real quick.
Right.
But yeah, and then so I put that on hold for like a year or two. And then I didn't hear anything about it. So I was like, okay, maybe they're not doing it. Maybe I can bring this back. Because I also had some new ideas because I saw like a picture of their board and I was like, oh, they're trying to do Willamott's Warehouse, like copy-pasted version of it. Like putting it on like a grid and actually building a warehouse, making like a full-on memory game. And I wanted to lean less memory game, more humans coming up with descriptions of weird shapes game. So that's what I did. I started, so basically what's going on in this game? It's called Sigil Sorter. You are new interns or students or whatever at the magical library. And they've got of these sigil tablets just piled up on the floor because the wizards are careless. And so it's your job to sort them and put them back on the shelves. Except you have no clue what any of these sigils mean because you just started here. So you have to figure out how to sort these sigils in a way that like when you are asked where they are, you can go get them. So basically you just need to internalize a sorting system for these sigils. And so what you do is each round there's one person who's going to be the sorter in my mind thematically. They're up on the shelf, like putting the books in. And then the other players are the seekers. They're scrambling around on the floor trying to find the things. So each tablet with a sigil on it, and these are all like weird squiggly shapes that I've drawn. Each tablet has a corresponding reference card. So each round you get 5 reference cards, and you have to search through the deck to find the match for the reference card. Right? You find the match, and then you give the matching tablet to the sorter, and you put the reference card face down in a stack. And so basically all this is doing is setting up a way so I can check. Do you actually remember your sorting system? There's one person who's sorting, right? And they are sorting, and I've made it chaotic with this real time. It's real time. but you've got 10 minutes, so it doesn't feel like real time. You've got 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. So yeah, no, that's nice.
It's just time constrained. And so as you're going through, you're trying to find a strategy for sorting them. And it's not like Willamott's Warehouse where you have to group them. You have to put them in a line. Right. And I give you these categories at the start. So I'm like, well, actually, this library specialty is necromancy, fire, and hats. So there's your starting categories. So then you get, and this is like, I wanted to lean more into the human side of things, because then you pick up a picture and it's this weird squiggly shape with like 2 lines and a dot in the middle or whatever. You're like, I think that looks like an elephant. And then the other person's like, nah, that's not an elephant. That's like, it's a fire magical symbol, so we're putting it in the fire section or whatever. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. And so you have to start building up a story essentially for what all of these things are, and as a group you have to kind of agree on what these things are and where they fit. So it leans much more into getting a bunch of people to agree on a story for all of these things than like full-on memorization
of where
something is. And then the way we check if you actually know, because this was the in Wilmot's Warehouse, you just gotta go find it, right? You put it somewhere in the back and you gotta just, you're just running in circles if you're not doing a good job. What we do is each round, let's say you've done a few rounds, you get 5 new cards each round, so you got 15 cards sorted out now. You'll deal 4 cards off the reference deck. So all of the cards in the reference deck are also now in the tablets, the sorted deck, and the seekers now have to put those in relative order. Those 4 cards, they have to just say, this one is before this one, which is before this one, which is before this one. So you don't need to know exactly where it is. You just need to know relatively where it is, which then leads to the fun conversations of people going, is this more, this is like an actual quote, is this more of an olive cat or a cat's cat? Right? And so it just leans more into the human association side of things than the, like, memorization side of things. And again, but like, to get better at the game, you do have to come up with a better sorting system. You know, maybe don't put everything in cats, because it's going to be really difficult to know all of the different types of cats. Maybe split things up. Maybe make some subcategories. Maybe it is angry cats and happy cats, right? And then you can be like, well, that's a spiky looking cat, so it's going to be angry. So it kind of gets into that, like, what is it? The Baba Kiki thing?
Oh, it's the game, Baba Kiki, yeah.
Baba Kiki, Starts to get into that sort of stuff. So it's like, just, so anyway, so that's been fun. No one's made it through the whole deck yet, which has got 50 cards in it. So yeah, don't expect them to. But it's basically how far can you get, how many rounds can you get through in like 10 minutes? And you get longer, more quizzes as time, as like the deck gets bigger. So now it's like, here's 7 cards. Do that twice. But I just, try to make the quizzes more friendly and less exhausting, because that was my problem with Wilmot's Warehouse, is it just became a chore and no one's made it to the end. But I also don't really care if anyone makes it to the end, because that's not really the point of the game. but people have more fun conversations.
How exciting is that, right? I mean, that's
the last thing. One is lay out the entire deck, sort it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
probably not. But you've also looked at the deck multiple times at that point.
Oh yeah, because you keep doing it. People get really good at it. I saw one group just like they were failing for the first half, and then somehow the sorter just came up with this nonsense system that just worked for him, and then everything just clicked. And suddenly everything was working. And they eventually crashed and burned, but like it was really cool just seeing them flip from this is chaos and I don't know what's going on to, oh yeah, of course that goes there, because that's clearly a monster. And we put the monsters that are missing their heads near the necromancy section, because that makes sense. Right? So it starts to turn into that sort of stuff.
It has a vibe of like a Hanabi type style of communication, where you're just like, except for it's like self-imposed, because everyone's dealing with opinions instead of, I like it.
My favorite thing is, I've got one player who plays all the time. Or not all the time. He's played a lot of the games, and he really likes it. But he's seen enough of the symbols to be like, oh, that's the wheat one. That's wheat. So we put it in the wheat section or whatever. And it's always hilarious, because he'll be like, that's wheat or that's a beetle. And he immediately gets overruled. Someone's like, no, it's a cup with fire coming out of it. He's like, oh, okay.
It's like, so well, it's like, I haven't played this before.
But that doesn't work for that group, right? So there isn't a correct answer. It's, what does the group think? Does the group think that that looks more like a flaming cup? It's a flaming cup this time. You better, like, don't confuse people. Because if you confuse people, they won't find it.
Yeah.
So that's been fun, just watching that happen. But so we'll see what happens with the Wilmot's Warehouse board game. I hope it's different enough.
I can't imagine it's going to be like that. It feels like
it's the same core of like, here's a weird shape, can you organize them? But I hope I'm leaning into a different like take on that.
I bet theirs will be more spatially oriented.
Theirs seem to be more spatial, because it's a grid and you put stuff on it. And that was the part of the game that I was like, we don't need this. Sorting things into a line and then not having to do a perfect sorting seemed more interesting for fuzzy human brains, which is why math is not helpful, because human brains are fuzzy. And when you lean into the fuzziness, it's more interesting than if you lean into the logic.
It's true.
Because logic's solvable.
Yes.
You can figure out the correct answer. And that's boring.
Exactly.
So, anyway, wrapping it up.
Awesome. Back. Well, hey, that was, this has been fun. I hope the listeners enjoyed this as well. If they didn't, we'll just assume it's because they want to learn more math. And they are begrudging that they've learned all this math. But yeah, I appreciate you coming and hanging out with tonight and explaining stuff to me that is probably too complicated for me, but I do feel like I was catching on to most of it. So that's exciting. I learned some cool stuff. And yeah, and the game sounds fun. Next time I see you in person, I hope I get to play it.
Definitely. It plays terribly online. So.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine. Yeah. So probably PAX or something.
Gosh, yeah, I'll be there.
So, but before we go, do you have any information, like ways to get a hold of you you want to give out to people?
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, I do have a newsletter now. If you just go to ConnorWake.com, that'll work. My game company or whatever, not a real company, is Always Awake Games, which is just a silly
not a real company. Last name. I like that. Always Awake. Oh, I get it. That is actually super clever.
Also, I have sleep issues.
Right.
My granddad told us the story of when he was a kid in England. He fell asleep in class and he got woken up by the teacher and he was like, were you sleeping? And he's like, no, I'm always awake. He got hit with a ruler because this was old timey England.
Yeah, that was back when they did that.
Yeah. So anyway, inspired by that. So if you go there, and then also, I do have a game that's theoretically coming out soon.
Yeah.
I can't like fully announce it, but I'm pretty sure next week or the week after, if you follow or sign up for the Floodgate Games, newsletter, mm-hmm. You don't have to, but it'll probably be posted there. But if you want to find more information, you might want to follow along on that newsletter and yeah.
Awesome.
And I'll awesome. Say more when it actually comes out.
Yeah, we just missed it by a couple days. We're just like a little bit too early for you to be able to talk more about it. So
feels like enough of a spoiler, but you know.
Right. So awesome. Well, listeners, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can, of course, go to buildingthegamepodcast.com, find a link to our Discord. I'm confident Connor will also post that information in the Discord as soon as it comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can also email us at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can just keep coming back every single week. But until next time, good night.
Good night.
Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. The end of the episode, that's
when it technically ends.